You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in, boy, I feel like Florida is back.
We're packed in
no
Florida.
No boots today, no jacket, no. Nothing.
So exciting.
We're here on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and we are heard all over God's magnificent planet.
We are on 1510wwbc.com. You can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, after the show, we always kind of edit things up a little bit and put it on our archives, which also is on the show, 1510wwbc. Just hit that on demand button and you'll catch every one of our shows that we've had right on there on your Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and you can download it from there. We also put it on all of our social media as well as our website, which is sitamediainc.com.
That's right.
Get a few pictures and stuff.
Right. So for our listeners who are tuning in today, that was the voice of Ellen O'Neill. She is my co-host. We've been together for 15 years on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And you know what? What a wonderful friendship we have.
We do.
You are my Fantastic. Friend with a big fat capital F. That's it.
Back at you.
It's just wonderful that we met through the American Business Women's Association, and I have met a lot of really good friends there.
Yeah.
Loyal friends, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so Ellen and I sit here on Mondays from 1 to 2. We're going on 15 years, and we host this show called Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And then we added on Ali Tamber, who's a friend of Ellen's, that comes, she's like our guest resident forever. She'll be here co-hosting when we need it.
That's right. And happy birthday. Happy birthday weekend.
Thank you.
Happy birthday to you. And so, yeah, we sit here and we talk about things that are going on or issues right here in Brevard County, Florida, in the state of Florida, around the world, around the United States. And I have to say, our show is fun and it's exciting and unscripted and for the most part, very educational and informative. And we try to keep our show fair and balanced, even when we have politicians on or people who are advocating for different causes and things. And I think that's what people like about our show. And that's what Danny likes about our show. And he won't let us go. So we'll be here for a while.
There are at least two sides to every story.
That's right.
That's right. On our show today, Ellen, I think you saw the lineup. We have a repeat guest. Our friend Natalie Pace is calling in, and Natalie is going to be talking about her advocacy, which is to leave the Earth a better place than she found it. She's a co-creator of the Earth Gratitude Project and the best-selling author of A Power of a Billion. So she'll be on first. Our second segment, you know, is with Deborah Grossman, and she's going to be talking on behalf of Opus Peace about soul injury. And you know, there's a lot of people walking around with injured souls, and what a great show to have, you know, the first month of the year, so we can help people to heal.
Right. Absolutely.
So she'll be on second, and she'll talk about the seminars that's coming up and how we can help. So on the phone is Natalie Pace. And Natalie is calling in from Arizona because she had to flee the fires in L.A.
Oh, goodness. Goodness. So, Natalie, thanks for making time for us.
Hi, Sita.
Hi. Thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and speak with Ellen and Allie and I.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. Hi, Ellen. Hi, Allie.
Hi.
So talk to us a little bit. The last time you came on, we learned so much about recycling and our earth and, you know, just having gratitude for Mother Earth. I like to say Mother Earth because I think if everyone says that, we will protect her and take care of her, right? So bring us up to speed about what you've been doing as co-creator of the Earth Gratitude Project And I'll share your knowledge and wisdom and experience with our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Well, thank you for that introduction. I think that, you know, and as you know, I travel the world and we try to feature the good news. So whether it's, you know, people that put student learning gardens in local schools where kids have more fun learning, but they can also get healthier food, to green landscaping, to regenerative agriculture, all kinds of ways that, you know, why bike sharing is so important. And I think that what I really wanted to come on today and discuss, especially since, you know, I'm here because of the bad air and the bad quality in LA. I did not suffer like a lot of my friends and clients did. I didn't lose a house. I didn't lose a business, but just staying there and trying to breathe air or drink water that you think is safe, that's a challenge. And I think that, you know, there are so many lessons, like, you know, when we think about, oh, let's protect Mother Earth, you know, it feels like something we should be doing altruistically. And I'm telling you, we need to do it selfishly, because not only can we save thousands of dollars in our budget, which we can have a lot more fun with than giving it away to utility companies and water companies and all of this, but we can also help to, you know, fireproof, hurricane-proof our neighborhoods and our home. So I think that there's many lessons that we can draw. We can start drawing on them now. We can have a bike as part of our emergency kit. You know, we see it time and time again. Even, you know, I have friends and family in Florida. When you guys have to evacuate, you are in gridlock trying to evacuate. So, you know, I think it's just important for everybody, and not that you're going to want to ride your bike from, you know, one side of Florida to the other, but in Palisades, in Lahaina, we saw people have to jump out of their cars and just run towards the ocean.
Yeah, you know, and I was watching that when you all were evacuating, and the worst part of it is when the traffic came to a halt and people mm-hmm. had to leave their cars and literally, like, just wander off.
Yep.
You know, we all watch that, and it was scary.
Yeah, they had to run to safety. And a lot of those cars burned up. And of course, they were grateful that they didn't burn up in the cars. But just as an example, I mean, and obviously this is not one where a bike would have helped a lot, because I have a friend who lost a home there. And her grandchild actually lived in the home. It's a disabled grandchild with a handicap. But that's the kind of person that you want to be able to get out in the car, while the rest of us maybe can take a bike or something, you know. I mean, that's Pacific Palisades is a rather small community, and it's not that difficult. It is kind of up on a hill, but it's not that difficult to ride bikes around there. It just wasn't built for that. And now in the rebuild, hopefully they'll start learning the value of shared roads, like so many other neighborhoods have learned. It's better air quality. It's better health for the citizens. You know, it's better in an emergency. There's a lot of things that can really benefit from having shared roads, you know, just that even.
Yeah. And you mentioned when you sent me some of the stuff we were going to go over that it is questionable, right, if we should hire an expert to help with the landscaping and keep it in harmony with Mother Nature, because we all watched how the palm trees fired up like a torch, and all the other herbs and shrubs and things that just lit up like, my God, like 4th of July. It's horrible how things just were flying all over the place, and those things then started igniting other places.
Right. And whether it's Florida or California, if you can plant native, those plants have evolved over, you know, thousands of years to be able to thrive in that particular environment, you know. So it's really important. Like, a lot of us think, oh, I'll just go to an eco-landscaper. But it's more important to actually go to somebody who understands about native landscaping. And that's going to actually, in addition to fireproofing or maybe even hurricane-proofing your home a little bit more, it's going to save you on water. That could be $1,200 or more in savings annually. It might even start saving you on utilities if you build well. And you figure, like we've talked about this before, a timer on your water heater or an on and off switch on your water heater. You don't need to heat and cool water while you're sleeping or while you're away or even while you're on vacation. The bigger the appliance, the more energy it uses. So again, we can think, oh great, I'm protecting Mother Nature. But I think it's more important to know that if we work with Mother Nature, we save thousands and we thrive. If we don't work with Mother Nature, then if something happens, you know, it may be terrible for our community and it may take a long time to rebuild. And in the meantime, we have to evacuate. You know, we're seeing this more and more. It's not just happening in one spot.
Yeah, that's so true. So tell us what happened that day when you were at home and you were told to evacuate, because, you know, my son had to evacuate as well. And we were watching in horror here in Florida when the fire started and we literally saw mansions, fall into the ground, and people were just watching and the shock and awe of it all. It looked like a war zone. When did you know that you had to leave?
Yeah, so I was in a zone in Santa Monica that was about a half a mile from the evacuation warning and about a mile from the evacuation order. And so you'd go to sleep at night. And first of all, you couldn't open your doors or your windows because the air quality was too bad, right? You were warned against that. So nobody went outside to see how close the fire was, really. I mean, unless you were actually evacuating. And then also, you know, it felt like, wow, you know, if I'm asleep, I hope that I'll get an alert that wakes me up that I'd better run, you know? So you had to have something by the door. And then it just got too much stressful, like every day, do I have to go? Do I not have to go? Can I open a door? Can I breathe outside? Should I drink the water? It's just too much trauma. And here it is now, the fire started on the 7th, and it's now the 5th, right? And even though the fires are, you know, getting contained, maybe even they're out by now because of the small amount of rain, the air quality and the water quality are still very questionable.
Yeah, and you know, with the wildfires spreading and the climate getting hotter, why do you think so many people are still in denial about the climate?
Well, what I like to do is I try to stay away from, and as you guys do as well.
Yes.
I try to stay away from the political conversation about it. So if we pull out words that, like climate change is a word that separates us. But clean air,
and it really shouldn't, right? Anytime you talk about clean air, clean water, affordable housing, it should be for all of us. It should not be political to protect Mother Earth at all. And I don't feel like you're right. I don't want to be political about it either. But you hear people saying, well, it has nothing to do with the climate. And you're like, well, yeah, it does.
Well, I would just say this. If we're really trying to have a conversation with somebody to fund it, if we use buzzwords that are going to trigger people, they stop listening.
Correct.
If we find areas of common ground, and that's a big part of it, right? Like it's the name of this great movie about regenerative agriculture. I suggest everybody check that out. It's just now, I think it's on Amazon Prime, Common Ground and Kiss the Ground. But anyway, when we talk and we eliminate the buzzwords, and we talk about clean air, clean water, healthy food, more fun for our kids and healthier food in the schools, we can come together and solve problems. When we talk about, hey, you could save almost $10,000 a year if you just rode a bike more. And you gave, I know the mayor of Santa Monica had 4 adults in his family. He had 5 bikes, 1 car. And occasionally they would have to use rideshare. I don't have a car anymore. I rent a car to come to Arizona. I still pay in all the transportation expenses, including cabs and all of that. It's probably about less than a fourth of what most people spend on their one car. So I would just say, when we talk about greening your wallet or all the money that you can save, or, you know, I mean, I know people that are, you know, very, very conservative, and they know the power, especially in Florida, of putting solar, and they will. And that's because they want to save the money. They may not think that they have to save the planet, and there's, you know, there's all kinds of non-conspiracy things that they are believing in, right? Like, there are natural cycles in our planet. I, as you know, I'm pro-environment, pro-Mother Earth, and I believe in climate change, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to push that down someone's throat and tell them that they have to.
That's
but
right.
When I start talking, you know, when I start talking about how much money you can save, people lean in.
Yeah, I have a knack for doing that as well. I think I know how to get my points across without, you know, slamming someone for their views. Like, I think it comes from being reasonable and listening, right?
And looking for common ground.
Right. And I think the key to life is we don't know everything, and we've got to listen. Like, you know, we've got to listen to other people and their ideas and what they're talking about as well. And so for listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with our friend Natalie Pace. And Natalie, you know what? You do so many things besides being an environmental justice person and co-creator of Earth Gratitude. Talk to us a little bit about, you've been featured in so many things, including King Charles when he was the Prince of Wales. You talk to us a little bit about some of the things you were involved in.
Yeah, so I started out, and thank you for mentioning this, I started out as a young single mom, and life didn't add up, and I had to live my way into the answers. And so that included budgeting better and investing better. What happened was I ended up tripling my money at a time when most people lost like up to 80% in their dot-com stocks. And so my girlfriend said, oh, you've got to teach us what you know. So that led me on this path of financial freedom. It's unbelievable, but a Nobel Prize winning economist actually wrote the foreword to my book, enthusiastically recommending it. The first one was Put Your Money Where Your Heart Is. So I immediately had a launch pad once the system worked. And so I was really promoting financial freedom, financial literacy. It was a combination of budgeting better and also investing better, protecting our wealth, diversifying, all that. And of course, I always had the penchant for green. So I would just say, before I would feature something in my financial literacy project, I wanted to kick the dirt. And so I really wanted to feature a lot of sustainability because everybody wanted to invest in green stuff. Back in 2007, it was the top performing industry. And so that took me around the world, and I did end up going and touring a number of different projects that then the Prince of Wales, now the King Charles III, had in England. And that wasn't the only thing, though. You know, I would also go and tour Ron Finley and the, you know, gardening projects that he had in South Central LA, or the Edible Schoolyard Project, which was Alice Waters' project in San Francisco to put, you know, learning gardens in public schools that were underserved. So it just was a lot of fun. And of course, once I said I like to go and see sustainability projects, I just got invited places. So the first platinum LEED rated home in the United States, the first platinum LEED rated building in Europe. And it's just been a lot of fun to be able to feature what the good news, the great ways that people are learning how to work better with Mother Nature, all of the savings associated with that, no lack of comfort, you know, better health oftentimes too.
Yeah. And the good thing is, the more people you meet, Natalie, at some point in your conversations, I'm pretty sure you, like I do, you know how to bring the conversations back to just what we were saying and find a common ground and say, what can we do to help our communities? Because we're all watching that even though people talk about technology, we know that technology was coming to the aid of some of the communities in LA because the government was able to use technology to tell people where to go, which roads were bottlenecked. And so it's like a team effort, isn't it?
Yes, it absolutely is. And it's also, you know, it's listening to Mother Nature. I think that one of the things is that we get very disconnected from the very planet that actually nourishes and sustains us, right? So I would say, you know, and again, this is actually good for our mental health. It's good for our breath. Like, put in ocean breathing or forest bathing or something like that. like this in your life. And I know that for people that live in a concrete jungle, maybe that's hard. And that might mean that you need to go and become a bigger part of your community and say, hey, maybe we need to take out that parking lot that we don't use as much anymore now that we have shared roads. Maybe that should become a park, you know, and these kinds of things. So, you know, I think that we have to think about ourselves, you know, like when I'm going around in Santa Monica now, I'm like very cognizant. Why are we having all these 100 foot tall palm trees that we know are not native that become torches and the dead palm fronds? Whenever we have a windstorm, if you're driving down the street in Santa Monica, it is hard to drive because there's too many dead palm fronds lying around. In the high winds, if they're on fire, they are the ones that are spreading. They're the ones that become those 100 mile an hour projectile of embers, you know?
Yeah. Or maybe the cities have to pay attention to the buildings that are old, because it's the communities there are growing, right? And so many of those buildings don't have adequate evacuation planning. I think you're right. This gives people pause to sit down and maybe to plan better for the future, knowing that it's a beautiful place, but it comes with a responsibility, right?
Well, I think it's just that we can, you know, and we were talking about this before, you know, like with Earth gratitude or any kind of gratitude, you know, really, if you want to express it, it has to be an action. Like you can't say I'm for Earth gratitude and then go and be a big polluter and not be aware of things. You couldn't say to your husband, I'm really grateful for you, and then be mean to him. You know what I mean?
Yes. So put your money where your mouth is, right?
Exactly. You know,
and your
put
efforts.
Your money where your heart is too.
Right.
And,
right.
Of course, I have to say that because that's the name of my first book. Sorry, big plug. But anyway, and gratitude is not something you can force. We also talked about that. So, you know, like when I was redoing my budget, you know, I was like, look, housing is eating me alive. I had to fix my housing budget. And once I did that, I had all this extra money to launch this financial literacy project. Nobody pays me to go and tour their sustainability project, right? Like I might get hosted, you know, I might stay in a beautiful, luxurious place and receive some great meals, but I'm not getting paid. I'm paying for my own way there. But I'm grateful for it because I've realigned my budget so that basic needs are not eating me alive.
Right.
So if you're not yet in gratitude, if not yet feeling like you can fix your living space, then let's fix your budget. And then you can start working towards fixing your life.
Right. Well, it's all relevant, right? It's all relevant, right? Because I mean, charity starts at home. you sound like my husband. He always says, why did you buy 4 cucumbers and 5 or 6 tomatoes when you only use 1 or 2 and the rest goes in the trash? That's $8 in the garbage. And I'm like, oh my goodness. Well, we'll recycle it, right? And he goes, but that's not the point. Don't buy it. But you know what I learned by reading and getting prepared for the show, that people are very receptive when you try to make changes that's going to benefit everyone, and more local volunteers are creating like fire councils and participating in the Firewise USA program run by the National Fire Protection Association, and it gives communities guidance and checklists how to improve their fire safety. And I think this is really good because it creates like a pathway for citizens and local officials to work together to protect their communities. Have you heard of such things in California?
I'm sure that there are. And that of course, the fire departments are very active in this sort of thing. But what I would say is that we also have to be, we have to have broader awareness. Like when we turn on the news right now, you know, you are going to hear people saying, oh, the LA fires was, you know, these crazy Santa Ana winds, which are every year seasonal pretty much, right? But they were faster, hurricane force, and you're going to also say it was bone dry conditions. Well, we live in a semi-arid area that experiences drought a lot. So you can't just watch the news or join a council, because what if they are looking one of the most important things, right? Like, what's the most important thing in your neighborhood? Okay, let's go and make sure that we get rid of the invasive species and put in native species. That's a big, that's one of the most important tools that we can use to fireproof. And by the way, in your area, it would be probably more hurricane proof or flood proof that you got to figure out.
Yeah.
Or even, especially with rising sea levels, plants that can handle brackish water. So, you know, these are things that we need to, and we can't, again, you can't just go to an eco-landscaper. You actually have to go to somebody who knows native landscaping for that particular area. It's different area by area. So that's what I would say. Also, like in Southern California, it drives me mad that we live in a semi-arid place. We're draining the Colorado River, and we have people that water their lawns every day. Like if we live in Seattle, okay, if you live in England or Ireland, okay, have a lawn because the Mother Nature waters it for you.
Yeah.
But if you don't, or maybe even Florida, right, because Mother Nature would water it for you. But if you're watering every single day, look at your water bill, right? And by the way, you could also at minimum do gray water. And for those of you that don't want to replace your plumbing, how about a hose from your washing machine to water your plants? You know, there are simple little tricks that, and like your husband said, you know, when you go to the store, don't buy four times as much food as you need. It's only going to go bad.
Right.
Better to go more frequently with, that's why I shop with a backpack. And by the way, walk or bike there if you can.
You're so right. But you know, and another thing too, Natalie, what I was thinking, you know, after the fact, like, you know, we have the EPA for a reason, right? Because after the cleanup begins, then we have to figure out what to do with the ash, all the chemicals from the burned areas, the burned vegetation, the buildings, and where to put all that stuff to protect human beings. So it's not just the fires, it's the cleanup afterwards, correct?
Oh, the cleanup is super important. But again, there, you know, we have to be careful. And that is that there's a lot of ways that nature can clean up these areas. And we need to be we need to include native landscapers, wastewater gardeners. We need to include people who are not at the table right now that are really aware of various strategies that where we work better with nature rather than, you know, like a lot of times who's at the table are people who say, oh, well, I have this great chemical that puts out fires. Okay, now let's just put all this and let's ship it to India. Or, you know what I mean? So we have, you know, we kind of sometimes end up exporting our problems.
You know, and oftentimes if you have a round table, which, you know, we all watched President Trump in L.A. recently, and he got some great ideas from regular people. Well, how about just getting the gardeners who actually planted these plants and palm trees and stuff, and they'll tell you right off the bat what's good for the environment and what's not. You don't have to have a man in a three-piece suit or a woman to tell you, you know, what's going
that's
on.
That's never done it or you know? Never been active.
Like you say, include nature.
I'm not sure that most gardeners do know. I think that a lot of gardeners are planting whatever their clients ask them to, and they're maintaining it as best they can.
Yeah.
So I think that we really do have to go to, there are indeed, and they are rare, but they are there.
Yeah.
There are wastewater specialists.
Well, you know,
there
give us Natalie, give us your website really quick before you go, where someone could learn about the ABCs of money, the power of $9 billion, and where they can contact you and see all the wonderful things you are doing to protect Mother Earth, which in turn protects us and leaves a better footprint behind, because I think our second guest is going to be calling in momentarily. We love you. I'm so glad you're part of our show. And Ellen, you take it from there.
Well, we want to get her, Natalie's contact info and how we can purchase the books as well as find out more about her on her website.
Great. It's at nataliepace.com. So it's pretty easy to spell, nataliepace.com. And also, Sita, we want to offer your people the best price and a free coaching session if they do register for our Financial Freedom Retreat by Friday, January 31st. So everybody go to nataliepace.com. You're going to save a couple hundred dollars on the registration price, but you're also going to get a free private coaching session with me personally if you do it by Friday. Just mention that you're part with Sita. And you can also get the links for all of my books at nataliepace.com and a link to the April online retreat, so you have no travel or lodging costs, and it will transform your life absolutely.
Well, we will make sure we put all of that on our website as well as all of our social media. And one more quick plug, because you were given such great information. There's a movie called The Biggest Little Farm. It takes place in California, and it was the most aware I have ever been about sustainability projects and about how, you know, not simple necessarily, but the education of what those people got from doing that particular movie and the coaches that they had were just amazing. So I recommend that to everybody who's starting or even thinking about sustainability projects, about how easy it can be. So once again, we're going to take our quick break, listen to our sponsors, and we'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these messages.
Thanks, Natalie.
Thank you.
The family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9. That's Cloud9Furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000. Or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in the beautiful Cocoa, Florida. We're heard on AM 1510, WWBC 94.7, FM 99.9, FM 100.7, and online everywhere. And what a great first segment we had with Natalie Payson talking about protecting our planet.
Absolutely, yeah. And the sustainability projects are going on all over the place, and people think you have to have all of this money or all of these different things to do. And you realize that it really only takes a few things to start becoming more of a sustainability expert in your own home.
Right. And so our second segment, you know, it's a friend of the show. Deborah Grassman is here on she's on the phone, actually. I feel like she's sitting here with us.
Right? Feels like it.
And we're going to talk to her a little bit about her book, Soul Injury, Healing the Relationships You Have with Yourself. And Ellen, I know you and I and Allie, we've had so many friends that passed away the last year. And all of us have to heal in some way. We're injured, whether we lose a job, lose a friend, lose a family member, lose something in ourselves. And Deborah is here to talk to our listeners a little bit. And she's with Opus Peace. I'm sure you've got the website pulled up. So, Deborah, without further ado, good afternoon, and thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends again.
Well, thank you, Sita, and thank you all your friends. I appreciate being here with you, and as you said earlier, I feel like I'm sitting right there with you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's how it is sometimes, right?
We like it like that.
Yeah, so talk to us a little bit about yourself and Opus Peace, and bring us up to speed about what's happening with you and all the seminars and things that you're going to be having.
Yes. Well, for those who may not be familiar with me, I am a psychiatric nurse practitioner that worked in the VA in hospice for 30 years. And during those 30 years, I took care of more than 10,000 dying veterans. And I will tell you that dying veterans have taught me lessons that honestly you can see and hear and bear witness almost nowhere else. And I can also tell you that everything I've learned that has really mattered in my life, I learned from the dying. Because, as you know, perspectives shift dramatically as death approaches. You know, the day before you're given a terminal diagnosis, you pretty much take your life for granted. But the day after, you'll wake up. And things you thought were so important now seem insignificant. And the things that had been escaping your attention suddenly thrust themselves forward with an urgency to complete.
So tell our listeners, Deborah, what is a soul injury?
Well, a soul injury occurs when you become separated from your real self, from your sense of self. And it commonly happens insidiously, kind of gradually. You may not even realize that it often occurs in childhood with different messages that you end up, you know, ingesting, and you take it on as your identity. It also, not unusually, occurs after trauma. So after trauma, maybe you have PTSD or maybe you have a moral injury, but if that PTSD, if that moral injury causes you to become separated from your own sense of self, then you also develop what we call a soul injury, because you become separated from your own sense of self. You lose confidence. You feel lost. You feel like you're missing in action, so to speak, in your own life.
And there's so many people who are walking around like that. And so I'm grateful that you all have the Opus Peace mission. So, Deborah, tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends the mission of the Opus Peace mission.
Well, the Opus Peace mission is to help people heal the relationship they have with themselves. So we provide a lot of resources and a lot of self-help tools in order to do that. And certainly the book that you referenced in the opening, Soul Injury, Healing the Relationship You Have with Yourself, is a book that's coming out on March 1st. And it provides the concepts, it provides self-awareness exercises, it provides the tools so that people can, in fact, learn how to kind of unify and reunite with all the scattered pieces of self that often, you know, we have a piece of self that we don't like or we're uncomfortable with. We exile it into unconsciousness.
Right.
And it sits there. We don't even know it's really there. We shove it around. We numb it out anytime it tries to speak its voice to us. And yet there's some very simple, straightforward ways we can open up to our whole self, so our total self, so that we can completely inhabit ourselves.
Right. And, you know, I think people do feel like that, right? Sometimes you wake up and you feel like part of you has been left out or left someplace else. Maybe you're depressed. Maybe you didn't exercise. Maybe you didn't finish that report for school. Maybe you're rushing to work on less sleep. Someone died in the family, and you've got all these emotions and feelings, and yourself can't be together as you start that engine to go to work or whatever, because you're scattered, you're all over the place. And you're saying that through education and the opportunities that Opus Peace provides, we can help people to bring all of those feelings into the one self again.
Well, I think it's more than to just ventilating feelings. I mean, ventilating feelings is important to be able to externalize them. But more importantly, that people don't really pay attention to is the part of self that is storing those feelings to begin with, and often storing them unconsciously if you've numbed that part of self out. So it's you're absolutely right. It's being open to those feelings. And more importantly, it's learning how to connect to the part of self that's holding those feelings for you. And that's what we do, is connect with that part of self. And if you really drill down to almost any feeling that you don't like feeling, it comes down to that we are blatantly afraid of emotional pain. We are blatantly afraid to feel emotional pain. And that's where the numbing agents start. And numbing agents are not just alcohol and drugs, the way people automatically.
I was just going to say that so many people would much rather take a Zoloft or a Paxil or a Trazodone.
Well, just the opposite, though.
Instead of hitting the feelings and anchoring their heart and saying, hey, I'm going to have to hit this head on.
But just the opposite, though, there's a lot of people that dive into work and they become like super, like doing everything kind of thing, and never a time for themselves, because then they don't have to deal with
the pain
or whatever that it is. So being super successful, it, you know, could also be a characteristic of somebody.
And
that
then we get them in the nursing home and they're 80 and 90 on every drug under the planet.
And they wish they hadn't worked as much.
So Deborah, talk to us a little bit about February 2nd and the event, the annual public service event, to Anchor Our Heart Day.
Yeah. Well, the Anchor Your Heart tool is a very simple, straightforward tool that we use to help us get real with whatever we are feeling, to get honest with ourselves. I mean, honest, you know, really, when you're in an untrustworthy environment, you don't necessarily want to be real with people around you with what's really going on inside you. But what happens is that we often develop a facade, and then we mistakenly come to believe that we are the facade. So we teach a very simple, and we call it Anchor Your Heart. It's a three-step process where we have people just stop, turn inward, breathe deeply, and open up to whatever it is, getting real, getting honest, having the courage to feel just for a few seconds. See, it's amazing if you just get a glimpse of what's real and you label it as real and you don't judge it and you just are able to sit with it just for a few moments, and then be able to sense that brave part of self that's holding that feeling for you unconsciously.
Yeah, you know, you hit it, you said that word breathe, right? And as a nurse, and of course you're a nurse practitioner, we all know how important breathing is. That's the last thing we look for patients when they're passing away from us, right? But why in regular human beings who are walking around and talking and alive and well, they don't take time to actually take deep breaths? And that is so important that you said that, because when you take a deep breath, it's your heart, it's your lungs, the most vital organs, right?
Yes, it starts the process. There is, in fact, a little bit more to it than just simply breathing, but attaching the mind, being mindful along with the breathing is another important aspect of it. And Sita, I want you just to imagine on February 2nd, at 3 o'clock p.m. in the Eastern Time, that all around the world, and last year we had more than 800 people joined for 3 minutes of conscious stillness.
Oh, that's beautiful. Anchoring
our heart and just getting real with whatever is. I'm going to tell you that kind of conscious stillness as a community, as common unity, is a rare and precious commodity.
Yeah.
And just creating, I always call it creating space for grace for just 3 minutes. As I said, we're not talking about making this into 20 minutes a day, a weekend or whatever. We're talking about 3 minutes of communal stillness, of just being real with who we are and who we are not. See, that's what helps us be who we are. And that's what helps us stop being so afraid of emotional pain and just opening up. And that's how we prevent soul injuries. That's how we prevent becoming separated, building stoic walls that separate us from who we really are. So that's going to happen on February 2nd, and I would definitely encourage you to encourage your listeners and their companies that they may be. You know, there's a lot of companies that have their whole company stop for just 3 minutes at 3 o'clock to do this with us. So we would absolutely welcome that for sure.
Right. And in addition to that, you have another event coming up, a 4-day institute. And is that going to be on April 28th to May 1st?
Yes, it is. That's once a year we do what's called the Opus Peace Institute for Soul Injury. And that's where we train people, leaders, in how to provide soul injury programs, how to help other people heal the relationship they have with themselves, you know, that to create that inner peace, that inner stillness, that where you can kind of go into the wilderness of your own soul, so to speak, and connect with whatever you discover there, and then learn how to take that forward.
Right. And you know, in our nation, we talk so much about mental health, right? But Opus Peace is giving us, you're opening a doorway for people, because once you can get in touch with your inner self and find that peace and harmony to unite your soul and your thoughts and your words and your action and who you are as a human being, you're actually helping and healing people mentally and emotionally as well.
You know, what you're saying is so true. And our approach is a bit different. So many psychological approaches is teaching people how to be more resilient, how to be stronger, how to get over it, how to, you know, have a positive attitude. And not that those things aren't important, but we have a very different approach in that our basic premise is you already have everything you need in order to be whole. It's a matter of removing the barriers that are keeping you from accessing that wholeness. And what we have seen with dying traumatized people is that there are essentially three barriers that keep you from being real with all the aspects of yourself. And the first barrier is unmourned loss and hurt. Second barrier is unforgiven guilt and shame. And the third barrier is fear of helplessness and loss of control.
And do you feel like that's so because it's a cultural thing, or people just didn't have the time to mourn and grieve, or what? Because you're right. I see that a lot in nursing, where people didn't grieve. They didn't talk. I guess they don't have a good friend like Ellen to talk to. But if you have good friends, that's what girlfriends are for. You can talk about things. They steer you in the right place sometimes. But you're so right. A lot of people don't have someone or a physician or a nurse practitioner like such as yourself or a mental health advocate, anybody to talk to. What causes this?
They don't have time.
You think about where do we learn how to lose, how to fail? You know, we don't take classes on how to lose, how to fail. You don't see advertisements on TV that tell you how to lose and how to fail. What you see advertisements for is how to gain, how to achieve, how to hold on to, how to control. So first of all, you know, so naturally losing and failing is going to be, there's going to be a lot of fear, a lot of shame surrounding that. And so we don't think in terms of how to simply release the barriers, as opposed to, oh, just be stronger, just be more resilient. And honestly, Sita, telling people that they just need to be more resilient, they need to be stronger, that actually makes them feel more inadequate. You know, they look around and go, well, everybody else seems to be able to be more resilient. Why can't I be more resilient? What's wrong with me? See, and that's the seed of a soul injury. So, you know, again, we have a blatant societal fear of emotional pain. You know, it's pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. You got to be strong, you know, instead of being able to create, you know, a safe place for whatever feeling we have.
Right.
That's what you do.
And the other thing too, forgiveness plays a great, it's an important role in healing. And a lot of people, whether it's cultural or whether they just don't want to do it, they just don't know how to forgive. And well, I feel like for me, I forgive easily. I feel like it hurts me when I hold things in against people. I'm like, nah, it's not going to stay in my
head.
It's like
drinking poison and thinking the other person's
die. I'm not taking Tylenol for somebody else's headache. I'm going to forgive you, you know?
Exactly.
Well, there's a lot of misconceptions also about forgiveness. People too often think that forgiveness, to forgive someone means to just let it go. And certainly that's the last step. But, you know, that it takes a lot of work to forgive, and there's a few steps to it. It's not as simple as just letting it go. And a lot of times we say, oh, I forgave that person, when really we just swept it under the carpet because we did not do the work that it requires to, in fact, release it and send it on its way with hope and grace. That's very different than letting it go. In other words, forgetting about it and not addressing it and pushing it under the carpet.
So you
that's a whole different topic.
Oh yeah, we'll have to have you back because that's something near and dear to my heart.
I was just gonna say, on your website it says that you have soul restoration ceremonies, and on the website it says the best way to treat a soul injury is to prevent its occurrence. So what are some tips for our listeners that are here, and that are listening in? On some tips or maybe some warning signs that someone has a soul injury and needs some help, or maybe some prevention opportunities.
Well,
what are some things like
actually,
that?
Actually, February 2nd at 2 o'clock, we are going to do a one-hour webinar on exactly that. We are going to do it on soul injury, and you'll actually get to take the soul injury inventory. We do it as an interactive way and score yourself and the whole thing. So that would be the easiest way to do it, and I would encourage people to, again, tune in at 2 o'clock. So from 2 to 3 is the soul injury presentation and inventory that I will be doing, and then followed at 3 o'clock by a worldwide Anchor Your Heart communal exercise. But to answer your question as far as how do you address the soul injury, what we try to do is help people move from numbing their pain to mourning their pain, move from hiding their guilt to using their guilt to learn how to forgive themselves and others, and to move from being ashamed of not being good enough to releasing their fear of who they are and who they're not. And lastly, we help people move from controlling things that they have no control over to feeling their helplessness and their loss of control so that they can cultivate the courage to simply let it be.
Yeah, because life is hard right now. I mean, life is hard for everyone.
Everybody is
experiencing a financial change. You know, most of the time, especially over the last, you know, maybe 10 years or so, we're experiencing things that you know, the high housing costs and so forth. So there's a lot of helplessness out there because either people haven't learned some financial acumen to get them through challenging times like this, or once again, they haven't learned those skills and those things that you're talking about. So, the soul injury could come from anything. You know, it really could come from it. It's not just about necessarily loss or death or sickness or those types of things. Sometimes it's just the daily day-to-day of really not knowing how to cope with the changing that's happening right now. I mean, we saw it on the political front, right, over the last 4 or 5 years, this big divisiveness that people probably got a soul injury because of an election, or people got a, you know, whatever. Their person didn't win.
As I said, most soul injuries are very insidious. I always tell the story, my Lassie story, where I was crying when I was 5 years old and my dad laughed at my tears. And so I became ashamed of tears. And for 30 years, I never cried again. And I became ashamed of any part of me that ever felt sad. I was ashamed of the sad Deborah. And it wasn't until I was 35 where I asked myself the question, why am I so afraid of tears? Why am I so afraid of emotional pain? And that's when I remembered that incident when I was 5 years old and that I'd made this five-year-old decision. And that's when I cried for the first time in 30 years. And that's when my unfreezing began. But I will tell you that in that intervening 30 years, I had an insidious soul injury that kind of kept me locked up behind this wall of shame that I sometimes felt sad, and I didn't think I was supposed to feel sad. So yes, it can be very insidious, but it does impact almost all of us. The other thing, Sita, and I know you've attended one of our workshops, we do free all-day workshops in Florida. They're for the state of Florida. We have a grant from St. Petersburg College that they sponsor where we put on all-day workshops. It does have to be in the state of Florida, but if any of your listeners would want us to come, it's no charge to the host. They just have to provide a venue, and we can come provide an all-day workshop, four different sessions throughout the day. And we do provide CEs for that as well, for nurses and allied counselors.
Yeah, I saw the CE credits. I thought that was genius. But going back to that same piece of what you're saying, that everyone could experience a soul injury. And a lot of times, too, people make declarations like what you could have done as a five-year-old and say, I don't cry. You know, like that's my bottom line. I don't cry. Instead of asking the right questions, which is, why am I so sad, or why do I feel like I want to cry? And and sometimes it is just asking the right questions. And it's riddled all through your, not riddled, but all through your website about the holistic approach to all of this, and realizing that it could come from anything and from anywhere. So it's a beautiful opportunity for people to reach out to you and find out those things. Just one other note, what are some things that you would find in a family member or friends if you suspect they could have a soul injury or could benefit from your group?
Well, I think, again, kind of combining it with what you just said about asking the right questions, you know, just having a conversation such as, you know, are there times in your life when you feel lost? Are asking right now, you know, sometimes you seem a little bit lost, like you're disconnected from yourself. Is that the case? You know, just inquiring about it. The second thing I would say is, because most of us have experienced a soul injury at some point, sharing that with someone. You know, there was a time in my life when, for example, you know, whether it be my Lassie story, or I can think of another time when there were a lot of changes forced upon me, where I got separated from my sense of self, and I looked in the mirror one day, and I was looking for my soul in the mirror, and what I saw was nothing. I mean, I wasn't there. And I remember that day, I looked in that mirror and I said, Deborah, I don't know where you are, but I will not stop until I find you. And that really began a quest to find myself. And I didn't even really, I mean, I knew there were all these forced, unchosen external things that had happened to me simultaneously, kind of. So it certainly put me at risk for that. But at any rate, I think just like you said, just asking the right questions, sharing your own vulnerability of a time when you felt separated, when you felt lost, when you felt scattered, when you didn't have your feet underneath you and you kind of lost your ground. Those are wonderful ways to have a meaningful conversation. Of course, the other big thing, we'll cover this on February 2nd, is the soul injury inventory has 8 questions. They're very simple questions, but they're very non-judgmental, and it's a powerful, powerful way to have a meaning, to open the door to a meaningful conversation. We give it to patients, we give it to family members, because it opens powerfully meaningful conversations and dialogue.
Beautiful. Well, I want to, with our last minute here that we have for this segment, I'd like to remind everybody that the new book is being released on March 1st. It's entitled Soul Injury, Healing the Relationship You Have with Yourself. The opuspeace.org website is fantastic and has a very easily navigatable section so that you know exactly what classes and what things that you want to be involved with. How do people sign up, and how do they let you know that they heard about you on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends?
Well, I, like you just said, the opuspeace.org, if you can't remember that, you can also go into soulinjury.org. It'll get you to the same place. It has a contact us button. You can hit that. We also have an online learning courses that you can go on, and you can actually get lots and lots of videos for free that will acquaint you with some of our approaches. And also allow you to do online learning if you so want. We also have a calendar of events. We have a big event tomorrow. We have a webinar that's going to be about abiding, which is part of the self-compassioning process that's on our calendar.
And we will make sure that all of those links are available for all of our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Deborah, thank you so much for sharing this fantastic opportunity for everyone. Thanks again, folks, for tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Make sure to tune in each and every Monday here at 1510wwbc.com.